Welcome to the Hole in the Wall Business Podcast with Bill and James. I'm James Groves, and along with my business partner, Bill Dement, we want to share our journey as small business owners with you. As owners of Hole in the Wall Drywall Repair, we will attempt to peel back the curtain of owning a small business in the trade service industry and talk about the many adventures of owning a small business. Hey there, Bill.
Hey, good morning, James. How are you?
Great. I'll tell you what, we had an exciting weekend, didn't we?
It was good. Nice. We did a little travel, got out of town.
A little travel.
Went met a lot of people. That was good fun.
Franchise show all the way out in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. I got to meet one of your old friends out there.
I know. We got to tour a great distillery.
Oh, we got to tour a distillery. It was fun.
It pays to know people.
That was good fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, listen, I'm excited to have you introduce this guest that we have today.
Yes.
I've been watching this guy for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if I've ever said it to him, but I really respect him. I respect what he's done with his career.
I can see why.
And I just like, let's get him, bring him in, man.
Absolutely. So it's my pleasure to introduce Rustin Durden. Rustin, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So glad you're here. Our fans are happy you're here. And it's funny because I'm not going to even say the company you're with now because that's coming at the end because I don't want to kind of taint you're in this sector because you're 25 plus years in business. The many lives of Rustin is really what I want to hear about.
Yep.
And so just for our audience to kind of know a background about you, who are you? What's your story there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. As you mentioned, 25 years of, various experiences across the board. I went to high school here in Central Florida. I was granted a scholarship to play baseball in Tennessee, which was a great opportunity to kind of get out of town.
Yeah.
Didn't travel a lot really as a kid, but it was a good opportunity to get far enough away from home, but not too far.
Right? And you got your basic education.
Got the education, right? So got that under my belt. And, I had taken my Series 7 license test and everything like that in my senior year of college. And my plan was to be a stockbroker. Right.
So I didn't know that
Morgan Stanley or, be in the financial services industry. So, 2 days after I came home from Tennessee, I started working at a company called Northwestern Mutual here in Orlando. And about 3 days into that job, after 6 months of prepping, so, sales isn't for me. And I kind of cut my losses at that point. And decided really quickly to move out. And so I moved out of that business. I went to work at a restaurant at Ale House.
Yeah.
Okay. One of our favorites.
Yep. Yeah.
So well.
And just kind of regrouped over, the next couple of months or so and, figured out what I wanted to do next, right? So decided to go back to school at UCF. Got my MBA over the next couple of years. I worked at Siemens Westinghouse in the power generation division there in Orlando. So it was convenient right across the street from the school. So I'd work during the day and go to school at night. So it was very, very productive. And then about 2 days after I graduated with my MBA from UCF, me and my wife both decided to quit our jobs and buy into Planet Smoothie franchise.
Oh boy.
Hmm. Yeah.
So that's a switch going from the Morgan Stanley style world to your MBA and working at Siemens, and you decided just to cut bait and buy a franchise.
Well, I'm curious, is that something that you guys have been thinking about for a while, or you just like this popped on our radar and you kind of made a pretty quick decision about it?
No, I would say for a good year and a half, we had been exploring different franchise companies, and we looked at some large, some smaller. And, it really came down to the people at Planet Smoothie. It was an emerging brand, emerging concept, 20 plus years ago. Smoothies weren't as prevalent as they are today.
All right.
And, I just really trusted the owners of Planet Smoothie at the time. They're again, emerging, smaller business, not a lot of locations. And I hit it off well with the guys. And we ended up buying, me and my wife both ended up buying two existing locations. Yeah. And we went to work behind the counter, right? With degrees, not making a lot of money, just kind of grinding it out. And from there, it, you know, Planet Smoothie served us well for 20 years.
Well, you think when he bought into Planet Smoothie, I mean, we know it now because it's just...
Oh, they're all over the place everywhere. Now. They're everywhere.
But, and back then, they weren't that heavy. So where were your locations here?
Yeah, we bought one in Lake Mary and Winter Springs.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. those were the first two. And then we quickly expanded. Let's see, we've been really all over Central Florida.
I know at one time you had one in Winter Park.
Yeah, we had one in Winter Park.
I remember that one.
So you bought existing units. So you didn't have to do the whole build out. You didn't go through that whole brick and mortar build out phase.
Well, that's how we started. Mm-hmm. We bought two existing locations, and our third location we bought was existing as well, right? And then we got into purchasing and building new locations, right? Negotiating the real estate deals, getting the right locations. That's always been key in the restaurant business. So yeah, over the course of the years, we've had 10 locations.
Are you selling any as you go along and kind of shifting around, or are you just adding on to your arsenal?
We've kind of bobbed and weaved quite a bit over the years, right? There's been some economic downturns and upside as well. And, you know, you move accordingly. So, you know, at first we built to 5 stores. That was our max that we had, actually 6 that we had all at one time. Right. And then we sold off a few, bought another one, sold another one, and kind of, you know, again, bobbed and weaved. Our most latest, you know, the most recent venture we had was a new location that we bought in Lake Mary. We built in Lake Mary. So it was a new location. And we sold it last August. So we ran it for about 3.5 years, got some good stability, good profitability. And we're able to tell a good story of how good the business was and get a decent price for it in the market.
So if you don't mind, can I dig into the Planet Smoothie world for a little bit? Because, you know, obviously we're franchising, but we're not brick and mortar, right? We're not opening up storefronts. So there's other challenges involved when you have to deal with customers. We deal with customers, but it's on the phone, maybe going to people's homes. But when people walk in your door, there has to be, it's got to be different. We don't have that happen in here. So I'm just curious, what was the process of learning that, how to get into that groove of owning your own business, you know, sitting at the cashier? I'm sure you hire people to do the work, but as a new owner, you said you were working behind the counter. How fast were you able to get out from behind the counter?
Man, I'd say we had to move pretty quick because we bought that third location. And that's the point where we had to step away and really, you know, make sure our managers were comfortable and we were comfortable with our managers operating the location. So for us, it was always about proper customer service, having a smile, making a smoothie fast and accurate, right? You look at other brands that serve a lot of chicken sandwiches every day, for example, across the country. And
it's a good example, though.
You hit on something there.
They make hot chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
And they do it the same way every single time, every time, with a great smile.
Every location, same. Yeah.
And so critical, and as we realized in our business, I had a passion for it. I used to do everything there was to do in this company. But as you grow, you just take additional steps away. You're getting farther. The more success you have, the farther you get from the actual work. And nobody knows me anymore. The public doesn't know me, which is fine with me. I'm okay with that. But when my son shows up at a customer's house, or any other of our employees, they show up at a customer's house, they are hole in the wall of that company. And that's, I assume that's the same even in a retail in the food space, where you've got, you know, those people, your manager, the person at the counter, they are Planet Smoothie. Nobody knows you.
Correct. Yeah. They're representing the brand and the family, right? Our family. So
how were you able to convey that to your employees at that? I mean, is that something you're obviously looking for that when you're hiring them, but is there a process where you're sort of relaying your culture and your values to them?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had a lot of help from Planet Smoothie as a franchise. You know, the the people that started Planet Smoothie had a lot of experience in the restaurant business, and they were able to help us get off the ground very quickly. So I don't remember all the details now. I've been far away from it for a while, but really the core was customer service, and the you know, training revolved around customer service. And I think there's a four C's of customer service, you know, poster that we had in the back based on all of their experience. And that's how we'd really, you know, help train our managers up.
So one of the things that as a business owner, we have a hard time with is releasing the reins. So I can't imagine a store, I mean, the process of saying, okay, Mr. or Mrs. Manager, you're going to run this business and I'm not going to be here to watch you, right? Then now you've got multiple locations. So now you have to manage multiple managers. And so they have to be you, right? They have to be Planet Smoothie, and they're just employees, right? So that's got to be, was it nerve-wracking at all, or was it an exciting to kind of say, hey, listen, you can run with it? I mean, you got to have had personnel issues, right?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
It's very nerve-wracking. Very nerve-wracking.
I sense a lot of sleepless nights were there.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it boils down to managing the appropriate metrics consistently and holding people accountable to, you know, food cost, food waste, discounts, having the right systems in place, which, you know, the franchise was able to help me establish quickly to start. And then we built on that, right, as individual locations and made it better over time. So, you know, again, managing food cost to a certain percentage every month in the P&L, managing customer complaints, or, you know, giving customers an outlet that's easy and simple to get immediate feedback. So, you know, day of, you can make corrective actions to, you know, with your employees or your manager, you know, to keep the customer service going.
Was there a time of year that was, or a time in all your years doing it, was there like one era that was like the struggle years, you know, or struggle months, or is there a certain time of year that was bad? I mean, what was some of the hardships that might have, you know, had to, you know, sharpen your chops a little bit?
Yeah, great question. It was, you know, cyclical every year. We go through the same thing, you know, and you know, we have two kids. Now there's 16 and 12. So throughout this process, they're young. And when Christmas time would come around, that was the cold time of year. People don't drink a lot of smoothies when it's cold.
Right.
And that's when people's expenses are the most high, right? So we had Christmas gifts and parties and everything. So, you know, it was saving time when spring and summer. And during the winter, you know, business would fall off and we'd have to float. So that was always difficult from a seasonality perspective.
Right.
You know, from 2007 till about 2010 was a very rough period. Again, because, you know, the economy fell off and, you know, people don't buy things like smoothies when they don't have disposable income.
Yeah, they're wasting all their money eating and living indoors.
Yeah, a little more of a luxury item, I guess.
So those were the challenging times. You know, we never got in a situation where we had to close a restaurant, but we certainly got close.
Got lean.
Yeah, we got very, very lean, and we had those challenges. But we battled through everything we possibly could, and we came out on the positive side. So, I mean, owning a business is all about timing.
Yeah.
Really. Especially, you know, if you're lining up to sell, it's all about having that good story for the last 3 or 4 years and showing, you know, a good track of profitability and revenue growth, and then having a good outlook for the next several years as well.
Did you have like any employees that kind of stayed with you for long term, or were they all kind of short seasonal style employees? Even your managers?
Yeah, typically, man, I still have relationships with kids that worked with us, you know, when they're 16 years old. Now they're 35, right? And they're professional accountants, you know, as an example of two people that I'm thinking of now. I've hired, I don't know, three or four people that came out of Planet Smith, other roles in my other business. You know, typically when you find a good manager, typically there's a 3 to 4 year tenure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Want to become a business owner, but not sure where to start? A hole-in-the-wall drywall repair franchise could be the opportunity you've been waiting for. As a franchisee, you'll have access to our comprehensive training program, ongoing support, and a proven business model developed to help entrepreneurs like yourself succeed. With our low overhead costs and high demand for services, you'll be able to hit the ground running and start generating income quickly. Achieve financial success while providing a valuable service to your community. Go to holeinthewallfranchising.com and take the first steps towards achieving your entrepreneurial dreams.
So obviously you have other businesses. So Planet Smoothie, well, that's running. And was that your baby or your wife's baby or both?
It was both. It was both. We kind of got it started, got it off the ground together. And then I went on to pursue other opportunities in the corporate right. space.
So Planet Smoothie is going on in the background while you're now trying to pursue other interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where'd you go next?
Yeah, so I went to work in 2007 for a supply chain company called CHEP, C-H-E-P. So we lease pallets in the supply chain. So really the concept is, as opposed to selling them, and then maybe at the end of the supply chain, when they come out of the retail store, some of the pallets get thrown away or scrapped. Ours is a circular economy model where we collect the pallets, repair them, and then lease them again through the supply chain.
So is that a national company or are they international?
It's a global organization.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's based in Australia. It's an Australian traded company on the,
I didn't realize
on
that.
The Australian exchange.
Okay.
We did move our headquarters to London a few years ago. But we're still traded in Australia, but we operate globally across pretty much every developed country.
Those are the blue pallet, the blue pallets.
Is yeah.
Those, yeah. So yeah. Whenever you see a blue pallet, I know it's a jet pallet.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, are they always wood or do you have any of the plastic pallets too?
We got into plastic a little bit and kind of tested it, but our core is wood. Really wood.
So what? Yeah. But most people don't really understand, unless you're in the warehousing business, like I was for a while, is that pallets are truly the lifeblood of the flow of merchandise, because you have to transport things from a truck to the floor, from the floor to the shelf, from the shelf back to a truck, back to the storefront of Macy's or wherever, and you have to do that with pallet jacks and forklifts and. And all those things carry pallets. So it's the platform that everything is carried on. And they get beat up. And a lot of times we take them for granted. It's like street cones. We just take them for granted. But there's businesses run just for street cones. And there's businesses run just to think that you could lease a pallet. Who would think about leasing a pallet? When I was running warehouses, I'm like, I'm not going to lease a pallet. I was going to buy them. It's like, yeah, but now you got to store them. They're a pain in the butt. And when they do break, what do you do with them? So when you lease them, you have the ability to swap them out. You have, you know, you don't got to worry about when you have surplus, they just come pick them up. You don't got to worry about having to store them because they take up a lot of space. So it's one of those items that I kind of relate to because I've seen them and used them for so long, but I don't think the average customer, even the small business person, even understands how important it is to have that supply chain moving and that all moves on pallets.
Well, that's more than I knew. I can tell you that. Wow.
You should go to work in the marketing department. Yeah, I mean, that's a nice nice spiel, man.
Yeah, well.
We'll make a short out of that.
Oh, yeah. That'll be on my resume to check.
No, we consider ourselves, you know, the backbone of the supply chain. It's the invisible backbone of the supply chain. You know, during COVID, when, you know, we had lumber shortages and labor and supply chain backups, you know, logistics, et cetera. Big problems because again, it's the backbone of the supply chain. And if you don't have pallets to ship merchandise on,
what are you doing?
It is. I just find it fascinating that some of the most mundane things are so critical to modern life. We've actually seen that with drywall, because we frequently say it's just drywall. Yeah. It's the world's dumbest thing, I think to myself sometimes, but 140 million homes in the US, 97% of them have drywall. I go, that's pretty important, but mundane, like a pallet.
Yeah. And so you were there. What was your position there? I'm sure you started and grew while you were there. How long were you there for, by the way?
Oh, let's see. At CHEP, I was 13 years.
13 years. Okay. And then what was your role there?
So I started in commercial finance, which was a great, great job, because I was responsible for modeling the financial profitability of new contracts or renewal contracts. So really, in order to do that, you got to understand the entire business. So, you know, I was in that department for, I don't know, probably 2.5 years or so. Started as an analyst, worked my way up to a manager. And then from there, it was all over the place. So I was privileged to have the opportunity to be recruited into what was called the, you know, CHEP, or Brambles is the parent company. They have a fast track program, which essentially gives you an opportunity to be a leader across all different functions of the business. So from logistics, operations, sales, believe it or not, asset management, you know, really touched every aspect of the business, which was an amazing journey. Great, great opportunity to learn, you know, in a large global organization.
Right. And they have more than just pallets. Obviously they were doing pallets and they were doing some sort of plastic containers too. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. We had a division, that we had purchased several years ago. It was a much smaller division than the pallet division. Pallet division was over $2 billion, in revenue globally. And then IFCO, which is the plastic container business, primarily, when you think about like a banana box, mm-hmm. right? It's cardboard, and our containers are plastic. They fold for logistics purposes, cost savings, right? When you're shipping them to customers. And same concept, right? Pooling in the supply chain, but it's plastic boxes instead of pallets. So just a smaller footprint.
Is that done on an international scale as well?
Yes. Yes, it is. Same scale, probably a few less countries than CHEP, but again, you know, a large global business. I think, you know, that time was about 800 million in total. North America is about 200 million.
Some big numbers.
Yeah, those are big numbers.
There's some big numbers. Well, and so, but you're not there anymore, right? What led you away from there?
Yeah, so just transitioning from CHEP to IFCO. So, you know, IFCO was purchased by a private equity group from CHEP, and I was recruited to go work with them.
So they carved out that portion for?
Yes.
For acquisition by another company?
Yes. So
okay.
A private equity group purchased IFCO from Brambles or CHEP. Brambles is the parent company of CHEP. And I went along with a smaller business to IFCO, worked there for about 4 years in Tampa. And then from there, you know, I had an opportunity to move to a totally different industry, which is proving to be quite awesome, actually. So I was recruited by a solar company here in Central Florida.
Well, that is a change of pace, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the one consistent theme and what I like is, you know, it's still the environmentally friendly concept, right? So doing something better, you know, to make the world a better place.
So I wanted to talk about solar in a second. What was the ride like to ride out the carve out and then move from Bramble to this new company? There's got to be some sort of story or some sort of lesson learned in there. Anything you would change, do, any funny observation you have to make on that?
It was, that was quite interesting, man. You know, I went from a very stable, large scale, corporate organization to a smaller private equity owned group that was developing, right? We built the entire executive team from scratch. I think there was one or two people that, they got kind of included in the new fold. So it's a brand new culture, brand new, team, office, capabilities, everything. So, one of the most interesting things about that journey, probably a little bit too much detail for somebody who's not, fully into the supply chain business, but, our contracts were always with growers, right? So there's thousands and thousands of grower producers across the country. And then we had agreements with retailers, but retail is really where the pull is for the business, right? So, we signed a 10-year deal, one of the biggest milestones that we had. We signed a 10-year deal with the largest retailer in the world in North America. And that was the game changer for us. So when you had the largest retailer in the world telling their suppliers what platform they need to ship on.
Oh yeah.
That changes the game. And there's incentives clearly for, the retailer that aligned with growth, profitable growth and sustainability for everybody involved. So that's really how we turned that business upside down in a very good way. And then, everybody's going to follow the largest retailer in the world.
Mm-hmm. So how long did that take from the time they bought it till you kind of got connected with this retailer?
I would say we started into it about a year after the carve out. And then there was about a year and a half of negotiation. Mm-hmm. And kind of getting everything together because it's a new space, right? Nobody, we've never done this before. No company has, that specific, section of the industry.
Was it an existing product, or did you have to create a product specifically for that retailer?
Oh, we had a lot of conversation about that, and there are different sizes of produce crates, about 7 primary sizes. And there are always requests for different specific sizes for a specific commodity, right? A larger size orange, a larger size apple, a smaller bag of grapes, et cetera. But the complexities that creates with supply and demand of product in the supply chain across the country, well, really across North America, right? Just think about having to have, 7 different SKUs in the right place at the right time. As the season transitions south to north, and most produce, 75% of produce is grown on the West Coast, and it ends up shipping to the East Coast where everybody lives. So then you got to reposition it, right? So it's a lot easier to do with one SKU, a pallet.
Mm-hmm.
That was simple.
Yeah.
But now you have 7.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of complexities there. So we always try to stay away from, we had new generations over time for the same size, but we always try to shy away from different sizes, increasing the SKU count because it just creates complexity.
Right.
And that's another thing, going back to the Planet Smoothie business, that's what attracted me to it. One of the key elements besides the people is that it's simple. It's a simple business, yeah. Right? It's simple, repeatable. And not very difficult to train from an operational
perspective. Well, and that equates to reasonably predictable.
Yeah.
You know how to plan, like you were saying, we know it's going to slow down when it gets cold. So we budget through the summer and the spring and I know it's going to be the same pattern next year. We've actually seen that a lot in our business as well. It'll, Christmas time, it's just ramping up. Then the New Year's comes and it drops off and then we know. By the end of January or at worst, by the middle of February, things are beginning to, I think everybody's past the holiday hangover.
Yeah. Well, and really that's the simplicity of drywall, when we were in the show in Dallas this weekend, many people were like, well, so you guys are handymen. Do you guys do electrical and plumbing too? We're like, no, we just do the drywall. And
there's a whole business doing just that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I love it when you get into a conversation with them and they say, well, I mean, how much business can you do? I said, well, we did 1800 repairs last year in Orlando, just Orlando. That's not one hole. If I come to your house and there's 10 holes, that's just one job. We did it 1800 times last year. Wow. And for the past several years.
Really?
Are you kidding? No, not kidding. Yeah.
And that's not even new construction. That's just repairs. And so getting our head around the simplicity of that, we always say stick to the knit. Like people ask us to do things that are out of our wheelhouse. It's like, we probably can do that, but that's not who we are.
But we're just not geared for it.
We're just not geared for it. We are drywall repair people. So that simplicity really rings a bell with me, obviously with one SKU with a pallet. And I can imagine, because even with your grow boxes, you have to have them all fit inside of containers and trucks. So they have to be truck pack sizes, you know, and trucks are fairly standard, but there's like two or three widths, you know, you got to worry about the 98s and to the 101s, the 103 wides. So you have to have your containers be able to be packable in trucks. You just can't have some oddball wonky shaped out there just because you feel like you want a different box, right?
So. Yeah, simplicity is key. I mean, the simplest kiss, right? Keep it simple, mm-hmm. silly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knew I could geek out over boxes?
I certainly didn't. let's transition because I want to hear about your new thing you're doing with solar. Tell us what you can about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So again, I joined this company here in Longwood, which is 15 minutes from my house.
It's terrific.
Amazing. It's a game changer living in the same zip code as where you work. I feel like, you know, I'm working from home or just like I feel comfortable all day. It's great going to the office. Obviously, nice. I travel quite a bit, you know, around the state of Florida, but we serve all of Florida. I interviewed with the owners for, gosh, it was 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do next. So I was, just having discussions with people. So I traveled with them to a conference and we went back and forth, is it a good fit? And I just came to really, again, similar to Planet Smoothie, I just really like these people.
Yeah.
And hit it off. And I thought, we could do something special here, right? Because we bring different things to the table. It's a father-son business. I got to mention wife as well. Wendy does amazing things for the company. She's a owner as well. But, they're contractors. And, dad's been a contractor for 27 years. Mm. He is the expert, right? When it comes to electrical, he's an electrical expert. But where they lacked and where I brought the skill set for the company is really around organization, accountability, for people, establishing the right metrics.
So critical for the ability to grow, isn't it?
It really is, right? Building that foundation of strength and, again, accountability.
Well, we've been inside your facility there and got a tour.
It's impressive.
It is impressive.
Mm-hmm. And so, actually, I drove by the other day. I'm like, hey, there's a restaurant facility. Uh-huh. And the name of the company is called?
Oh, sorry. It's PES Solar. Professional Electric Services is what PES stands for.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So we do, we do jobs all over the state. Primarily, we've been focused on residential solar, but we're starting to get more and more into larger scale commercial jobs. Again, because we have the electrical expertise to do it.
Yeah.
And the industry, is really, really interesting because it's emerging. We only have 4% of homes in Florida have solar.
Is that right? I find that surprising.
Yeah, and it is literally the cheapest, the most inexpensive form of energy on the planet, and we're in the Sunshine State. So, so there was a big splash a few years ago. A lot of companies involved. And a lot of companies are now falling off And, you know, just kind of unfortunately, you know, they were running and gunning and making false promises. And we saw a lot of that and just created kind of a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah. It was the Wild West out there for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I see that as a great challenge, you know, for us. You know, so we have a lot of experience. We've got a great, great rating, great following. And, that's why I wanted to align myself with this company is to, you know, I look forward, you know, to the next 20 years. I'd like to look back and say, hey, we changed the perception of solar energy. And
yeah, well, you're right though, because solar can, I mean, frankly, you don't know what you don't know when it comes to solar. I know a little bit about solar. I drive a Tesla, so I kind of follow some of those things. But there's some really, like, not all solar companies are the same. A lot of solar companies, I mean, they're different. The big juggernauts and the small mom and pop shops, they're not always offering the same product. They're not offering the same thing. So, I mean, how is PES really trying to carve their way into that trust, you know, that trusted market? I mean, how are you guys doing that? That's got to be the challenge.
Yeah, no, it really is. We have stayed focused. We've walked away from business, a lot of business, for price. And, you know, you can buy cheaper panels, you can buy cheaper inverters, you can sell people stuff they don't need. But we've really, you know, stayed to our core, and we offer the best panels on the market for a competitive, you know, and say a fair competitive price. And, you know, again, we've got 27 years experience. So we're one of the few companies that have outlived our warranty of 25 years. And, you know, that just doesn't happen. So organically, we're seeing that happen. Number one, by staying consistent and offering a good product and, you know, not false promises and honoring the warranties that we have. If there's a challenge with
operating with integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? We're not in it for the short term. We're in it for the long haul. And, you know, that's why we're a leading company here in Florida. But, you know, I'm most excited. You know, you saw it happen in California, Arizona, where everything started with residential, but I'm very, very excited to see what's on the horizon the next several years with commercial solar.
Would that include industrial as well?
Yes. Industrial, nonprofit, you know, there's so many, the government is so aligned around, encouraging clean energy, right? Because, you know, we have some serious problems with global warming and just having enough energy production, right? With gas, et cetera. So,
well, it's there. I mean, the sun is going to shine hopefully every day. And so there's power there. We actually were touring a facility in Dallas when we were there, and, a large portion of their roof was lined with solar panels. And so they were able to actually, not only provide the power for the building that they were working in, but they actually were selling power back to the grid as well. So, just by investing in the solar, they were able to then save in monthly expenses as well as feed power back to the grid. Is there usually some sort of ROI on a large size industrial? Might be too technical for you to answer right now, but like if I have a warehouse and I want to put solar panels on it, is it a 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, 10-year payout before you start breaking even on those things?
Yeah, I mean, on a commercial or industrial building is typically 4 to 5 year payback.
Mm-hmm. So you invest now, within 4 to 5 years, they pay for themselves, and you're basically moving on.
Mm-hmm. You move on, right? Yeah. So yeah. You know, we were with a company last week, has a $12,000 a month electric bill, and it's going to be gone 4.5 years from now.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So that's, I mean, true savings, senior. Helping the environment at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the incentives for businesses are amazing. So, you know, from a tax perspective, if it's a profitable company and you're making income, you're paying taxes, you can get a 30% credit back on the cost of the system. And then another between 20 and 30% it equals out using an accelerated depreciation concept. So it really is a great cash flow play for a business that's making good profit, paying a lot of taxes.
So I'm curious, one last question here, because I know you've got to wrap up on, going to be short on time, but I just wondered if there was somebody you might consider kind of as a mentor throughout your career, or maybe an area of management that really kind of stands out to you that you sort of focus on?
No, that's a great question. But yeah, I have a mentor I met about 15 years ago. I worked with him at CHEP. And, you know, this guy is just somebody that, you know, he really sincerely cares about, you know, how your day's going, how you're feeling, you know, really connects with everybody he works with on a level that, you know, just you feel like you're empowered, right? And just the communication and the care and the willingness as a leader to listen, it's really, you know, creates a high level of engagement. So, you know, this individual was critical in my development, and he's totally different than me too, right? So I'm much more naturally introverted, and you know, this person was a sales leader, a global sales leader, very successful, very extroverted. You meet him in a room and he just stands out, that type of guy, you know? But it wasn't an arrogant way, right? It was very, very sincere. And, you know, I'll go back to, you know, I say this a lot. God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. I use that probably on a daily basis when I'm talking to people. I just think it's so important to listen and understand where people are coming from, you know, and acknowledge that. So I've always felt very special when I talk to this person, and we've worked really well together. And I've been over backwards for him, work nights and weekends, whatever we need.
And obviously adopted some of that philosophy from him.
Yeah.
Do you find you're utilizing that as you're leading your crews now? I mean, you've got a whole business that you're now running. What's kind of your leadership philosophy? How do you keep that energy going?
Yeah. So I you know, it's a kind of against the grain in the construction business because, you know, people are used to being whipped and driven.
Yeah. Management by yelling, we call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's not my style. It's never been my style. And, you know, I've received plenty of feedback over the years about, you know, how I need to be harder, how I need to, you know, show out in front of leadership or ownership and, you know, really make a statement. But, you know, I believe over time, and I've seen it over time as well, that you don't earn long-term respect that way.
That's right.
You learn long-term respect by setting the pace for people and leading by example. So, you know, that's what I learned from my mentors. And I've tried to stay, I have stayed consistent to it over the last 25 years of my career. And it's, you know, it's paid off.
And you've obviously had good results.
Absolutely. Looks like it. Well, I know you got a time crunch here. Let's go ahead and wrap it up here. But Rustin, if someone wants to get some more information on solar, how's the best way to get hold of you or your company?
Yeah. So you can catch me on LinkedIn. Again, it's Rustin Durden, D-U-R-D-E-N. Or you can check out our website, proesolar.com. Stands for Professional Electric Services.
Excellent. All right. Well, very good. Well, thanks for being here today, Russ.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
And thanks everyone for listening. It was another great show.
A pleasure. Thank you.
We'd like to thank you for listening to the Hole in the Wall Business Podcast with Bill and James. We'd love for you to join our Facebook group and keep the conversation going. If you'd like to learn more about us and our business, check us out at holeinthewall.com. If you'd like to learn more about how to start a Hole in the Wall franchise, go to holeinthewallfranchising.com.